Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. Tonight is, January the 26th. I know I'm all discombobulated now. We're pre-recording this show, so if you actually are going to try and call in, please don't, because we're not here, and that will make it even, that's why I'm discombobulated. And then I've been dealing with time zones today, and I actually tried to I was here 2 hours earlier trying to do this show, and then and then I'm doing, my guest tonight is from Australia, so that adds another time zone element, and then, and you know, you just have to understand all the time zones we're dealing with when we do these shows. So it's just lots of fun. So there, and then we add, throw in pre-recording, so you know, and then time isn't real anyway, and it's all it's just all fun stuff. So there we go. It's all fun. And that must have something to do with today. Maybe it has something to do with the show tonight. I don't know. Maybe it will come in. We will find out. It's going to be fun. Whatever it is, it's going to be great. Let's see. A few announcements before I bring our guest on. We have the conferences coming up. I did say it was the Metaphysical Hour, didn't I? And I said, I'm Julia Cannon. I didn't do that. Yeah, you might want to know that. And we have our conferences coming up here. In April, we have the UFO conference, and that will be the 13th to the 15th. And then the transformation conference is in August, the 3rd to the 5th. So we have those happening. We also have classes going on. We have several coming up. And I'll talk about those like probably next week more. But tonight I want to talk about the conferences because that's what our guest tonight, she might possibly be, we will see, you know, I think you're a backup is how it's going right now, Lynn.
No,
I'm right. She's like, oh, no.
I'm listening.
Yeah, okay, I'm preparing.
Oh, dear.
Always lots of fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you're interested in our conferences, they are always lots of fun. Both of those conferences, you can find out more information at Ozark Mountain Publishing, which is the our publishing website, which is ozarkmt.com, or you can go to each of their, they'll have links to their websites, the conference websites, from there, or you can go to the Ozark UFO Conference.com or Ozark Transformation Conference, or just Transformation Conference. So you can get all your information, and we have our wonderful, wonderful speakers. Always, it's always fantastic. You can meet up with like-minded people just like yourself, and you know, so you don't have to feel like you're alone out there. You're very much loved. You're very much, you know, you're one with everyone. You know, so you're not, you're no longer the weird one. You're one with everyone. And so that's the wonderful thing about these conferences. Yeah, you're with like-minded people. And yeah, that's it. So, okay, now to our guest tonight. This is, I think, you are our newest author. Your book came out. Her book just came out, like, I want to say just last week, or maybe at the most the week before. So it's really, really hot off the press. And I've just been trying to get it organized. Like I said, the time zone thing and stuff. Just get it organized to get the show done so we can get, you know, get this started up to start promoting her book. So very, very excited about how everything's going and we can get going. Just so excited to have you here.
Thank you.
Sorry. This is our, like I said, this is our new author, is Lynn Wilmot. I'm so excited to have you here, Lynn.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited as well.
And you're coming, like I said, you're coming from Australia, and you're in Melbourne, Australia.
In Melbourne, yes, that's right, in Melbourne. It's quite cool here today, but it has been terribly hot because we're having summer, you're having winter.
You're having winter, yes. And it's been odd here too, hot and cold. I mean, well, warm and cold, not hot, but warm. But yeah. Well, so, and so you're having, so it's cool there.
This morning it is, but it's when I say cool, I suppose it's not really. By this afternoon, I'll be putting the air conditioning on again, I think. So, okay. I feel the heat a lot these days, and we've just gone through 41 degree days the other over there it would be over 100 degrees. Over with you, we're it's 41 here anyway, so it's, and of course we've got the tennis on at the moment, so those poor people at the tennis trying to play high grade tennis in 41 degrees is just impossible.
Oh, I can't even imagine. That would be horrible.
It's terrible.
I know, like 32 is like a it's really close to 100, or it's like 90,
right? So yeah, we're talking about 100 and 110, 112, something like that. Yes.
Oh my goodness, it's really,
really, really hot. Yes.
Oh goodness. Well, and have you been in Melbourne then all your life, or is that?
Yes, I was born here. Yes, I've been overseas and hitched around Australia and all those things you do when you're young. But yes, I was born in Melbourne, and that's where I am now, feeling quite at home in Melbourne.
Very cool. I've been in Melbourne a couple of times. It's very nice.
Have you?
I have. Yes, I really like it.
Great. Great. Yeah. Yes, we're the furthest south, if you don't talk about Tasmania, we're the furthest south. Poor Tasmania.
I have not been to Tasmania yet.
No, nobody has. poor Tasmanians, they get a raw deal. But Melbourne's, we're really far, further south. So they're saying next week, for instance, there'll be snow, we might have snow. So this is how crazy the weather is, that we've got, this week we're suffering, 112 degrees, and next week there could be snow on the mountains. It's just because we're so far south. So it's really, really strange. We really think that we have got, I think anyway, that climate change is part of this. Yes.
Keep going. Go ahead.
Oh, right. of course, I'm not quite sure. Over there, I know that politically it's not correct to talk about climate change, but down here, we're so far south, we're down near the Southern Ocean, and the changes in the Southern Ocean that the scientists are recording are extraordinary. And so most Australia, and then what's happening on the Barrier Reef, the reef is dying because of the heat, the hot water up there. So most Australians seem to believe that we have such a thing as climate change, and it is happening. There's not much we can do about it, though. So I personally don't think it might, a little bit might have to do with our human life here and what we're doing to the planet. But a lot of it, I think, is just cyclic. This is what happens in our solar system. It comes and goes, and it's always been this way. It's hot, and then it ices over, and then it's hot again, and we're going through one of those cycles. I think the whole of our solar system, every planet is going through a change at the moment.
I agree.
I don't know how we got. How did we get onto this?
No, I think. But that's fascinating, because how often not very often do we in the United States talk to somebody over in the other part of the world who has firsthand knowledge of the climate conditions and things like that. So this is very fascinating. So this is wonderful.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. I suppose because we're a little It's a small population on a very big country, and most of our country is a desert. We're very, very aware of the weather, of the climate, and of the land itself. Most people I talk to, so that we are, and we do listen when we hear various reports coming through. We listen, it's quite serious, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, and like what you were saying, as far as it being cyclic, you know, I agree with you, and I think, you know, I agree that. I mean, I think it's things that it's waking people up. It's things like that. But it's also, it's cyclic. These are things that happen.
Yes.
And we just happen, we are here. I mean, it's at this moment in time.
We're at the most exciting, or the change that is taking place. It's not only taking place in the weather, it's taking place in our state of consciousness. Mm-hmm. The change that is taking place now. When I first wrote this book, when I started writing this book, it was to do with my own trying to get over depression and ways and means that I was managing to cope with my own life. But as the time has progressed, I'm now much more interested in using my book to help people raise their state of consciousness, mm-hmm. because I think that's what this change, we need to raise our consciousness if we're going to survive. That's how I feel. I sort of pondering this for quite a while. The information that came through was that it doesn't have to be the whole of humanity changing. It's only a percentage of us. If a percentage of us can raise our level of awareness, we'll drag the rest of the population with us. That will cause the switch. So,
I have gotten that too, and I've heard that before too. And it's
like
you just need the tipping point.
A small percentage. I've asked what percentage, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I
was going to ask you.
I got the feeling of 10%, but then that might be me interfering with the information coming through. But I did get that. But that's 10% of our population. And what are we? We're in the billions, aren't we?
So yes, we are.
A
lot of people.
But,
you know, there's a lot that are waking up.
I think I'm sure in America, I listen to the various conversations, and generally you people over there seem much more aware than we are here. I hate to say.
That's so funny, because when I come to Australia, I feel like you over there are more aware and awake than we are over here.
Let's hope that we both countries are aware. I really don't get much chance to talk to anybody about this here, but then if you come over to conferences, then you've got the right people, haven't you? You've got the right public to talk to if you're at Australian conferences. Mm-hmm. Whereas I just talk to my neighbor.
Exactly. Where if you're going to these things, you know, you're going to the things that attract these people.
Exactly.
So that's who I'm seeing. Right.
More aware people come to conferences. That's true. Yeah.
Right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about this a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about your journey that got you here before we start talking so much about your book and everything. So that got you on this whole path. So what, you know, you were talking about depression or things. So let's go back to your beginning. Let's go back to the beginning. What got you started?
Right. back to my childhood. Well, my father had me when he was 19. So my dad was more like my big brother, and mm-hmm. we were really, really close. He was a socialist, so I had no interest whatsoever growing up in any sort of religion at all. So I wouldn't say I was an atheist. It would just, you know, religion just didn't come into it. And then as I grew, I went overseas, and then I hitched around Australia. This was in my 20s, and I still had no awareness whatsoever of this, anything spiritual. And then my father, whom, as I say, I was very close, my father died early. He was only in his 50s. He had a brain tumor. At the same time, I was a single parent having a child, this was in the 70s. One didn't do that really in the 70s. So I was a single parent having a child. Dad died. My partner, whom I was hoping to marry, married somebody else. And then my mother got cancer. So there were four things there that dovetailed over about 12 months, and that really tipped me over the edge. And that's when the breakdown and the depression started, and that was in my 30s. So I'd read a few books by then, Edgar Cayce, and I still didn't believe very much. So that while I was going through this breakdown, the most amazing things started to happen to me that led me into where I am now. I've mentioned a few of them in my book that came through as I visualize, because I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. I visualize so that a lot of my breakthroughs came as visualization and images. Mm-hmm. And I've mentioned some of them in my book. But it's taken a long while. A lot of people seem to have a breakthrough and it's instantaneous and they have an awakening, whereas mine took, I don't know, 30 years before I got to where I am now. It's mm-hmm. just been a long, slow process of having to accept that this is not the reality. Our reality is not, it's what we're creating, and time does not really exist. A whole lot, this whole quantum theory has helped me a lot. Science has actually been supportive of where I've been going. So, yes. So, is that enough?
Yeah, that's why we had the whole time thing happen a while ago. That's why that's why that whole thing happened. they're always doing that with me before a show. It's just something to support whatever the show, you know.
Right. Okay.
That, and see, and then you, here you are, you're saying, you know, this is one of the things that you were, you know, you're discovering and you found that, you know, this is not real. Well, here I'm showing you it's not.
No. It's really, really difficult, isn't it? At one level, everything's solid, everything around me seems real, and I move through life. But another part of me now, I can sit now and start to look at the walls and see them vibrating, and I can actually begin to see the dream that we're living in. I'm starting to actually touch it almost. Taken a long while.
The way you just now said that is so cool, because I can see it the way you said it.
And, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. And you see, even 5 years ago, I wouldn't have known this. This is the change that mm-hmm. is happening. This is the change that is coming through that is awakening so many of us mm-hmm. That almost if we start to try and understand this further, we're being helped. We're raising our consciousness, but I think from the other side, they're helping. I mean, how did I know that to look at the walls and see them start to shimmer? And that was someone else helped me do that, you know, someone mm-hmm. from the other side, I'm sure. Oh, the other side of consciousness, or higher levels. Let's call who knows exactly what it is.
I love, as I was reading your book and everything, and right in the beginning, you're talking about this other part of us, you know, it's like the part that has the body. In fact, go ahead and talk about that a little bit. I want it to come out of you, not out of me.
But you're interesting too.
I'll just start it, but it's like, you're talking about, like, you know, the part that's in the body is just this very small part of us.
Yes, absolutely.
And
it is.
And,
yes, go on.
And I'm trying to think if you use what word you use, because it was almost verbatim what I use
in
this drawing that I do. And I was like, wow.
I'm not quite sure. When I write, something else happens. That when I talk, I'm hunting for the right words. But when I write, it seems to just come from somewhere else. So a lot of this book has been given to me, I think, or given. It's more than just the ordinary me writing, I can tell you.
The book was written.
It really, yeah. Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting? It just flows and it mm-hmm. comes from somewhere. It's either my higher self or guides that are helping. I've never really had contact with any guides, but I do believe in them. I can go into a state. I don't really meditate very much anymore. I just drop down into my heart and feel the love, and immediately I see this, I can only see his face, but and I can only see his eyes, but as soon as I see this image, I am just overwhelmed he's so loving, the whole experience, and I can do this at a drop of a hat. So I know that a lot of my book has just been, I've just allowed it to come through. It's nothing to do with the small me at all. Mm-hmm. It's being given to me by other entities or higher parts of myself. Who knows? It's very hard to identify in our language, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, and it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's all parts of us. It comes through us.
No, it doesn't matter.
We're the willing vehicle to allow it to come through.
Exactly. So. Yeah, exactly. So, yes, that's right. So this small part, which is the body, I can tell you because I've just had a heart bypass. So all of a sudden, this little small part of me that's the body suddenly took over. And so my compassion for other people that are going through pain or going through, you know, traumas and anxieties and depression I just feel for them, because when you feel ill, the body just takes over, and it is only a small part. And we have to keep reminding ourselves that it's only a small part of who we really are. But under these extreme circumstances of illness, my goodness, the body is everything, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm being reminded for some reason, that's interesting, that hierarchy again. This came up a while back. The hierarchy of needs, I think it is.
Yes, Maslow's, yeah.
Yes, that's it. Because when you're ill and when you have things like that, you can't address your higher needs.
No, you can't.
So that's why those are taking precedence.
Yes, absolutely. I know that we're here to experience. I understand we're here to experience, but some of the things some of the people have to experience is the pain that some people are going through, both emotional and physical, is extraordinary what they have to experience. And I just congratulate them. I think they're so courageous. And if my book can be of any help to any of them, that would be good.
Absolutely. And well, like you said, what I love what you said is you know, it's through these things. I mean, that's when we learn. And that's when that's when we come through and we don't learn through the good times.
No, we don't. It's like if you say that we've got to, I don't believe in evil, but I do believe in darkness, and we need the darkness to see the light. So it's almost as if we need the pain to know how wonderful life really can be. We need one to reflect the other.
Right.
Of course, it makes it really hard if someone's really sick. Mm-hmm. And they listen to me now, almost switch the radio off, you know. Some people have so much to deal with.
Well, but go ahead. Well, let's go ahead and go the other side of that then. If they have all that pain and everything, let's give them hope.
Well, that's right. And this, basically, what I'm saying, this my book comes in one-page dialogue. So that the first part of the book, I've got 22 dialogues that talk people through learning to breathe through the heart center, and then learning to let go of the now and the chatter, and moving out into the silence. And from that point, usually people begin to have their own experience. So I guide them a little way, but at the end, I have to step back and say, this is your experience from now on. But to learn how to, it's only one method. There's so many methods and so many teachers these days. It's wonderful. So my method's just one. There's a wonderful book people could get called, it's Dr. Paul Purcell's The Heart's Code. Do you know about it?
Oh, it's not familiar.
He's died. He's dead now, but he explains how the heart is intelligent, and so there's an intelligence. It's almost like another brain within this. So it's not only the chakra of the heart center, but it's also the heart itself. The heart itself is an intelligent organ. And the heart itself, this is where the love can be found, in the heart. So if you can drop down into this heart and start breathing, I say pretend you've got a nose in the middle of your chest and begin to breathe through the heart. And as you begin to imagine somebody that you love, or something that makes love come into your heart as well while you're breathing, this whole experience can then bring you to different states of consciousness, and can raise your consciousness. It's that simple. It really is that simple.
And that's what's hard for some people to believe, is things like that can be that simple.
I know. I didn't. I mean, it took me a long while to come to this, so I know, and I can understand how some people can just, you know, flick it off as just another one of those woo-woo things.
Mm-hmm. Well, they want to make it complicated. They want to add a bunch of bells and whistles and put a whole bunch of stuff with it. But it's just that simple.
It's very simple. And the other thing I've discovered was, I laugh now when I think about it. I was driving along with my son. I was looking out at the sky, and it suddenly occurred to me that the silence that I'm talking about, that we go into as we meditate, that silence is there all the time. It's us losing contact with the silence. It's not us suddenly making the silence. There's this enormous infinity there just waiting for us to move back into it. So the infinity is just there waiting. All we need to do is just move into the silence, and then we're there. And we can do it sitting in the car waiting for lights. We can do it as we're walking down the street. These are simple things, and the universe is there for us to use.
That is such a good point, because that is probably the one thing that people find most challenging. Is how do I stop all the chatter? All the stuff. And it's not. And what you're saying, it's not that. It's like, how do I? Do this and
how do you just move into into the infinity? And it doesn't. And it can just be for a minute while you're waiting for the lights or something. You can do it over and over and over any time of the day. And if you can be in this really loving, relaxed, breathing through the heart state, even if it's only for 5 minutes, it grows. The actual experience, the more you do it, the more profound it becomes. The more it has a growth to it that I find very hard to put into words. But I know now, I've been doing it for a long while now, so that I don't have to meditate. Like, you don't have to sit and cross your legs and sit there for hours. You don't have to do that. You can almost instantly raise your state of consciousness and be there. And as I say, I think that the changes that are happening to us now, this amazing change that we're in, is helping us get to these higher states more easily than perhaps it was even 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely, because, they're raising up. And I think like what you're saying on the other is, once you know what it feels like, then it's just a matter of you recognize it, so you just go to it.
Absolutely. You just go into it, and it's just an ecstatic state. It's just glorious, and I'm not one to exaggerate, I can tell you. And yet, being able to do this, I must say, at the same time, I'm still not too bad now, but after my last operation, I slipped way back. I went right back into the hell that is huge pain, physical pain that all you're aware of is the body. So I slipped right back. But look, it's only taken me, I had the operation in August. I had not a very good time. By the time December came, I was pretty well back to normal.
Okay.
So, I must tell you this, so it's so ridiculous. I was having panic attacks, and I was really anxious because my body went into shock. I didn't want to know about what they were going to do. I only found out later that with this bypass, they actually take the heart out of your body. Now, the center of my whole life is my heart, you know, and so I used to sob. When I found out that they had put my heart onto some sort of machine, that upset me to such a degree I used to sob. But I still wasn't in a good place in December when my book came through. Ozark sent me my book, and I've used the book, would you believe, I've used my own book to get back to where I am now. It's crazy, isn't it? Isn't it crazy?
No, it's not. I think that's beautiful timing. That you had it there for you.
Yeah. It just came through, yes. So I can, as an outsider, can guarantee that this book, this small book of comfort, can actually help. It helped me.
Wow.
It's silly.
Well, if it's anything, I used to work in intensive care, and I would take care of the patients that had the open heart surgery.
So, did you really? So yeah. You know more about it than I do. Then I didn't want to know.
That was one of my jobs. Was I would go to the patients before the surgery, and we would tell them, you know, we'd instruct them what was going to happen beforehand, and. Yeah.
You know,
we had to tell them what was going to happen. Not in great, great detail, but they had to have an idea.
Yeah. So. Well, the reason I didn't want to know was I'm a coward.
Oh. I understand. I didn't want that to happen.
No, I didn't want any of this to happen. So you—that's what you were doing. That's amazing. So that, I mean, when you look at it from a medical point of view, it's a miracle, isn't it? What they can do these days is absolutely amazing.
Oh, it is. I've always, well, that's what I was saying. I've always been fascinated by the human body and then what medicine does with it. But then I went to the other side. That's where I am now, you know. Because I didn't like where it was all going, but yes, it is amazing with what.
Hopefully, and the next, you know, I don't know how long with this change coming so quickly, it might be sooner, but I'm saying in 30 years' time, they'll be using energy to heal us. Hopefully, there'll be some sort of breakthrough with understanding how the physical body is actually how energy drives the body or creates the body, and they'll understand this. And I think already there's some indications that there's at the cutting edge of science, I think they're already starting to understand this, from my point of view, the energy that creates us constantly is a field of love. So, but I'm talking about not love as in, you know, all these pop songs talking about love. I'm talking about a very creative, profound energy that is what actually we're made of. Right. When medicine finally discovers this, it'll be amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's the beautiful thing. They're starting to see some things. You know, some of the things that we're discovering through the QHHT and like what you're seeing through, like, you know, all you have to do is get in contact with this higher force.
Yes,
you
know? That's right.
And that's right.
and go on.
And like you said, that's all they have to do is if they can just get that other part, they're getting a hint, But yeah, they're just now starting to do some of the things that mom was doing 20 years ago with QHH.
Yes, yes.
With medicine, they're doing that. With science. I'll say with science.
With science.
Yeah, so that'll give you an idea of kind of where they are years-wise. Mm. So,
Yes, I think for our grandchildren, hopefully, it's going to be a different world that they're living in. As long as we can do this, as long as we can lift this state of consciousness, so we do become a different system. I listened to one of your conversations, and I smiled when both you and your mother talked about this as being a game,
mm-hmm.
because I've been saying for years and years that it's like we're all on a stage, and we have a backdrop, and the backdrop is the society's rules and regulations. And that's the backdrop. And we all perform in front of this backdrop. Slowly, you know, scene one, scene two comes and the backdrop changes. And I think, for instance, if we were talking about the war, First World War, after the First World War, then we had the flappers. And then after that, we had a dreadful decline in people's with the fall of money and the rise of Hitler. So each backdrop changes slightly, but it's the one play that we're all in this play, and we just adjust our lives to suit the backdrop that we're playing in front of. Well, the backdrop now has changed to such a degree. This is where this new state of consciousness is going to start playing out in front of this backdrop of enormous change and higher awareness and people being able to channel and. I mean, even now, the awareness of out-of-body experiences it's just extraordinary that we all know about it and agree with it and talk about it, that something like that was not talked about 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Or only a small group. This is mainstream conversations almost now. So that's our backdrop, and it's very exciting.
It is. And like you said, you know, that shifting is where we're coming now, is we're realizing that we, not only is it what we've been playing on, but now we are creating it.
Yeah, that's right. We're creating this.
Really exciting.
Yes, that's right. Yes, so that we actually make the backdrop change. Mm-hmm. You're quite right. We do.
So if you want to talk about that? Because that's your second part of your book.
Yes, my second part of my book is again, we've done it's done in a dialogue. So this is a very small book, by the way. And very cheap, so most people could afford it. But then the second part of the book is some of the experiences that I actually had, and I try to relate some of my experiences back to the actual science that is happening at the moment, or the understanding that we're now having about blockages, emotional blockages, what they do to the body, all sorts of things. What do you want me to talk about? Anything,
those are huge. I mean, emotional blockages are huge.
Yes, this the one that might interest a lot of people is the 9/11 is because I was over here, of course, it was nighttime, and we were watching the television and just not believing what we were seeing. And I went to bed and I just couldn't sleep. And I'd get up and I'd watch the television for a little bit longer. And then it was just dreadful. Well, at the time, at the pretty well at the same time, I'd been doing working with the idea of Bruce Moen, or Robert Munro's, we'll talk about it's his gateway, mm-hmm. Robert Munro's gateway voyage. And I'd been trying to help people, ghosts or people that didn't realize they'd died. Mm-hmm. I was trying to help them cross over. I was following a pattern. It wasn't my idea. It was Bruce Moen's idea, but I would try, and he called it retrievals. So, and I'd been doing that. And so on the night of 9/11, I just did not know what to do with myself. So I went back to bed and I just lay there, and I... It was the strangest feeling. Suddenly everything became grey, and I was in this grey place. And as I say, I'm a visual person, so I was seeing what I thought were raindrops, the shape of raindrops, but they were going upwards. Mm. And I'm thinking, it's raining upwards. I just did not understand what I was looking at in this very grey, shimmering, strange place that I was in. And then suddenly I realised that these raindrops were actually the form of spirits, or these were the people. These were many, many of the people of the 9/11, and they were going home. And I was literally seeing the forms going upwards, and it was the most extreme. It took away all the pain I was feeling for all these people. I thought, they're all going home. Mm-hmm. They've been released and they're going home. And it was so emotional. You know, I could almost cry now with the joy of it. It was joyful. They were going home. And so that was one of my experiences.
Mm. Wow. Go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, sorry.
You had another thought. I could feel it.
Yes, you could feel it. It was huge. One of my experiences when I was really trying to, it took about 7 years for me to get through my first breakdown. It didn't go over in a minute, but during that time, my little boy grew, and I went back to school and I got a degree in ceramic design. And so, even though I was suffering and going through this breakdown, things were developing. And one of the funny ones that I had was I'd put Dillian to bed. He was about seven, I think, seven or eight. He would be older, about nine. And I'd put him to bed, and I'd gone out, and I still couldn't watch television. The flashing of the television would just send me into a panic. So I had to watch. I had to listen to music. So I was going through trying to find out what I could watch, what I could listen to that night. And all of a sudden, it was as if some rubbery feeling came pulling across my eyes, pulling back. And I saw an arm thrust itself out of the water. And And I sat there for ages thinking, where have I seen that image before? Where have I? And I just, and all of a sudden I realized that it was the image of the film Deliverance. Would your audience remember Deliverance?
They probably would. Yeah. I'm trying to remember if I've seen it or not.
It was a really heavy film. I wouldn't really advise people to see. It was really quite a frightening film.
Yeah, well, I probably didn't watch it, but they may have.
Yes. But it was the image of the arm coming up out of the water, and the title Deliverance that gave me the message and told me that things were going to get better, that I was being delivered, and from that point on they started to improve. So those were the type of images that kept coming through my breakdown. So I was just being helped the whole time. And if you keep in mind that I had no belief in anything before all this, that I was agnostic, you can see that somebody somewhere said, look, Lynn, come on, pull your finger out. It's time you got on, time you got on with your job. So,
well, sometimes that's what it takes. You just have to break all the walls down. Really, and that's what a breakdown is. You're breaking everything down.
That's right, or breaking through to another state. Yes, exactly. And I think the more rigid you become, the more stressful the breakdown is, because you're just putting up every inch of you is trying to protest and say no. Mm-hmm. So breakthroughs can be very painful, and some of your audience might know this. I was very resistant to all this. I really didn't want anything to do with any type of spirituality. So I did have to suffer a long time span before I let go and allowed it all to happen.
Aren't we so funny?
I know. We just.
I mean, looking back, and you're like, why did I resist so much?
Exactly.
I didn't do as much as you did, but I resisted too. And I'm like, why? What was the big deal?
Exactly. What is the big deal? And you look back now and you think everything seems so easy, well, not easy, but a lot nicer, a lot more gentle and loving and compassionate and not angry anymore. It's all that's gone. And I think, why did I resist for so long? So, yes,
exactly.
We're crazy people, aren't we?
We are. We are a strange being.
Exactly. I look at trees and they stand there and they're just so magnificent and they're majestic and they're there forever, and I think, oh, and they have none of our trauma and drama at all. Excuse me. Sorry. Oh dear. So the second part of my book is full of those funny little incidences, but I do try to relate them back to, for instance, in one of the dialogues, there's I can't pronounce his name, Michael Nunnam. I'm really sorry if I pronounced it incorrectly, but he's a biologist, German biologist, and he is starting to understand that a lot of mentally impaired patients, or patients perhaps that have lost their capacity for human contact when they're really, really ill, just before death, he's found that a lot of them are quite lucid. Just before death, they get back everything that they've lost, and they're able to speak and have conversations. And he's termed this, he's labeled this terminal lucidity, so that that people who might have had dementia for years and years and years suddenly become alert and clear-headed just before they die. So so I found that really interesting, because my father, when he was dying, he had a brain tumor, so towards the end they had to even strap him down, because he, and they had to force feed him, because he'd lost all awareness, or his brain was pretty well mush because of the cancer, that spider cancer that had gone right through his brain. And yet right at the end we were talking to him, encouraging him, not wanting to think that he was dying, and we, my brother was saying, come on dad, you can do this. And Dad virtually looked up and said, I am fighting. And he swore as well, being Dad. And that was my father, who had not spoken a word for 3 months. All of a sudden, he was lucid again, yet his brain had gone. So what I'm trying to say is that there was another part of him talking, had nothing to do with his physical position, because the body had deteriorated and the brain had deteriorated, and yet Dad was talking to us just briefly, and he died within, I think he died that night. So that I think that we are extraordinary beings, and we only are just and science is good. Science is starting to research and find out, but we are extraordinary beings. And part of what I'm trying to say now, and I'm trying to do myself, is to find out who I really am, because as I say, we're extraordinary. And if we can allow this divine energy to come through, then we can do anything. We're not just a body. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, and that's fantastic, and that's a wonderful place that we're going to have to stop on.
Oh, okay.
Can you believe that we've actually gone over time?
I can't believe that, Julia.
Yes, we're so nervous.
So crazy. I was. Isn't that crazy? Oh, that's been lovely, because you're so lighthearted and so lovely, and thank you very much.
You have been wonderful. But real quick before we go, if anyone wants to contact you, if they would like to, do you have any way for them to do that?
Yes, I have got a website. It's pretty minimal. I keep begging my son to help me do something with it. But it's Lynn Wilmot. Oh, excuse me. Sorry. It's Lynn Wilmot, all one word, .com. So okay. That's all it is, lynnwilmot.com, and that'll get you to my website. And what I do, I'm blogging all the time. So that's mainly what's on my website, is blogging. And of course, I've got a Facebook. My book has its own Facebook page. So A Small Book of Comfort is on Facebook. So if you read it, that'd be lovely. If people read it and put some comments on Facebook, that would be great.
Wonderful. Okay. And then they can reach you that way too if they need to.
They can, yes. Yes, of course. Beautiful. And I'm on Facebook as well.
Oh, wonderful. Lynn, it's been wonderful. It's been absolutely wonderful.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it as well. Thank you.
Oh, yes, it's been fantastic. And just wish you the very best, and I wish everyone out there, just thank you all for being here, and thank you. Thank you so much, Lynn.
thank you. Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye. Good night, everyone.